Scott Bessenecker will be speaking this morning. He's currently writing a book about submission, obedience, and meekness. He's about subverting monopoly. I don't know what this has to do with the multi-billion dollar economic recovery stimulus package, but perhaps we'll hear.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I want to talk about monopoly a little bit this morning. It's a pretty interesting game. Probably it is the world's most popular board game. 250 million copies created at the height of the Depression in the 30s. Monopoly is this game that is about trying to possess every piece of property on the board and then charge such exorbitant rent that you drive every single family member playing into abject poverty.
Yes.
And so it's just this interesting play on these human tendencies, this sort of innate carnal desire to possess everything, even at the expense of friends and family members, and to drive everybody else into poverty. It's this quest for fame and wealth and supremacy and status and to rule over everything. There's a real life monopoly game going on today. This quest to own everything is real. There are people that are attempting to sort of buy up property. The monopoly game is happening in Cambodia right now. You know, in the West, there are legal means of obtaining property. And an economist, Hernando de Soto, suggests that the difference between why capitalism works in the West and not everywhere else is because of the path that's created to own property. If it's legal and clear and short, then capitalism works. But in most of the world, owning property is very convoluted, or property is pretty much owned. I think 12 or so families own Metro Manila. And so those who own the property lock everyone else out. And so the idea of property ownership or this monopoly game is happening in different places in Cambodia. It's developers who are betting that the tourist industry in Thailand is going to spill over to Cambodia. And so the government is parceling out the country of Cambodia, plot by plot, to developers. And I was talking with a guy in Cambodia who's working with the issue of land rights. I said, well, could a bunch of Christians sort of band together and buy property? Because what's happening is developers are buying property that is being squatted on by hundreds of thousands of poor people, and then they are bulldozed off so that they can, in the future someday, maybe develop a piece of property, a condo or something. And my friend said, well, I suppose you could play the monopoly game with the developers with enough money. You'd also have to buy the prostitutes to service the government officials who will zone in your favor and sell it to you and throw the parties and work under the table. If you're willing to do all that, yes, you can compete with the developers and help the poor own the property. So in a sense, the poor, of course, who are squatting have no means by which they could compete with the developers. And even many wealthy people of scruples could not compete with the developers. So the monopoly board is set in Cambodia. And I often, as I think about the corrupt government officials or the greedy developers, will have this sort of sense of piety or righteous indignation. But I love the game of Monopoly just like anyone else. You know, that's in me too. I think of the Sunday school teacher who tells the parable in Luke 18 about the publican or the tax collector and the Pharisee. And the Pharisee saying, Lord, thanks that I'm not like this tax collector. You know, I do all these great things. And the tax collector beats his breast and says, "Lord, have mercy on me, a sinner." The Sunday school teacher at the end of the lesson prays, "Lord, thank you that we're not like this Pharisee." Completely missing the point that the self-righteous walk away from that encounter condemned, and the humble corrupt walk away, the penitent corrupt walk away, you know. And my tendency is to say, "Lord, thank you, I'm not like that Sunday school teacher," you know. There's that tendency to put ourselves up, and I'm not that much different than the developers or the government officials. In various contexts, I would be similar. I visited a community in Phnom Penh while I was there, and I saw some pretty desperate poverty. I get around quite a bit and see quite a bit of desperate stuff. On Saturday, I'll be going to Calcutta. I'm sure I'll see some challenging stuff there. I'll be with an organization that works among the poor. But this was pretty nasty poverty. This is one of these communities that's being relocated. So the government has sold their land and has, you know, physically relocated the people. Some of these guys are sort of the last to go, but they'll sweep through, they'll pick people up in buses and ship them out to the piece of property the government has assigned to them, way out from any city services, way out from any jobs, way out from any transportation. And so these people are really at the mercy of the government. And we came into one shack, 10 foot by 10 foot, and there was a woman there who had just delivered child number 7 herself a few days before, you know, cutting the umbilical cord on her own. Child number 1, she said she didn't know where he was. Probably one of the many, many street kids. Child number 2, she said, was stolen, which our interpreter said means probably was sold into the sex trade. 3, 4, and 5 were in and out. Number six was naked next to her. She was laying on this bed of slats, still recovering from delivery, but sick. And so she was vomiting every once in a while between these slats, this hot 10 by 10 scrap wood structure. Baby number 6 is pulling at her hair, and she's sort of lifting her head and plopping it down. And the brand new baby was just right next to her. Her husband was in a hammock, passed out, or the guy who was there. And I thought, you know, this is a desperate situation. What is going to help this family? I mean, the energy required to bring education to this woman. Let's say she becomes a Christian. You know, the Buddhist mentality is you get what you deserve. And so what you've got, you've earned, and you ought to stay there because that's karma at work. Becoming a Christian delivers you from that mindset, but I still know too many drug-addicted, impoverished Christians to think instantly that woman's situation is going to change through conversion. Even that is going to require someone really planting themselves there, getting to know her, working with her for maybe years. Say they were able to get her husband off of alcohol or drugs. I'm sure prostitution has contributed to the baby factory that she became. What if that left? Still, the idea of education will be challenging. My guess is that this woman and her husband are partly learning disabled just because of early childhood malnutrition and maybe the anesthesia that he drinks in the form of alcohol. Those sorts of things are going to make training this couple a real, real challenge. Even if they could get trained, Phnom Penh has double-digit unemployment. University-educated, master's-level students are complaining there are no jobs. So, you know, you're going to work for 5 or 6 years getting this woman and her husband off of drugs, out of prostitution, educated to some basic skill where they can maybe operate a sewing machine. A lot of our clothes come from Cambodia. Maybe they could get a job in a sweatshop working 12-hour days so that they could be at just the level of poverty that most everyone else is in Cambodia. years and years of dedicated labor in order to bring someone to that level. I was really despairing, particularly when I considered the size of the problem. Here's a graph that illustrates urbanization and poverty. So we see that at the end of 2007, or somewhere in 2007, 3.3 billion urban dwellers, so about half the world, lives in cities. This is a subset. These two numbers, the urban poor, 1.7 billion, and urban slum dwellers, 0.88 billion, that represents almost 80% of urban dwellers are poor or living in slums. And we see, in terms of the growth, population growth at 1.2%, urban growth over 2%, urban poor growth at over 3%, and slum growth even faster than the growth of urban poor, at least two times or more, possibly three times just the general population growth. Slums are growing faster than just about any other population demographic. So when you think of Bofa, I'll call her, and her family, and the energy required just to get her into this category of urban poor, and you multiply that by the huge number in her community and then in communities all over the world, probably a billion slum dwellers in the world today in this category, man, you just get weighted down with the enormity of the task in this monopoly-driven world where the owners of the property are really not about to share their ownership or redistribute or charge rent that's reasonable. And you can get this sort of sense of hopelessness. Monopoly spirit is not good for us. Here's what Paul says to Timothy. Those who want to be rich, those with the monopoly spirit like me, fall into temptation and are trapped by many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is a root of all kinds of evil. And in their eagerness to be rich, some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pains. We were made to be in submission, and power was given as a trust. It was an investment that God made in his humanity. He made us in his image to govern in ways that guard the weak and ensure the well-being of all. The use of power for self-accumulation is sin. It is not what God intended. In fact, when he set up society, he tended toward governance through judges, not through kings. I mean, that was his original intent. He did make accommodation for kings. It's interesting to see some of the Levitical passages on kings saying, you're not to acquire much wealth, and you're to live at the level of the rest of the people. That's what it says in Leviticus. If you want kings, here's the rule. You know, I prefer judges, and here's how judges should work. It's a plurality of leaders. It's working to, you know, it's the judicial branch of government running the country. But if you want an executive branch with an executive, then the rule is this person has to be at the level of everyone else. We operate best in this place of meekness, coming under one another. Submit yourselves to one another in reverence for Christ. That's the place that will be best for our souls, not just for the people around us. That quest for status, that quest for power, that quest for money is harmful to the people around us. But ultimately, according to Paul, it's harmful to us. It's wearing on your soul to be possessed of that monopoly spirit. What if there were secret rules to monopoly? What if love was somehow measured in the monopoly game? What if those who redistributed their property when things got too imbalanced, as the sort of Levitical Sabbath laws or the Jubilee laws intended to sort of redistribute things when it got too lopsided, What if people started doing that monopoly, loaning at low interest, lowering rent when people couldn't afford it? And what if those things were measured and counted, and they became the rulers of a new iteration of the game? That's what the kingdom is about. This, what if people live like that? Like the kingdom is here, but not yet. It's coming. What if it's among us and we started to live like that? I met some people who were like that in Cambodia. One was this young Finnish YWAM missionary named Pia. Pia, bright, intelligent, could be a property owner in any version of Monopoly. She'd been living for 4 years among the poor there. She was the one who led us to Bofa's shack, brought some clothes for Bofa's baby, had a relationship with Bofa. And she has taken this downward path, this idea of saying no to some of the opportunities that will make her a wealthy landowner, and to go plant herself in this poor community that's being relocated. And Pia introduced me to Dara, this Cambodian woman. And this is good soil. This is the fruit of her 4 years of labor, this Cambodian woman who had decided to follow Jesus. And this lady was on fire. She said, you could tell, she was glowing. She said, you know what my favorite song is? I've decided to follow Jesus. And you know what my favorite verse is? The cross before me, the world behind me, no turning back, no turning back. And I think this community, the balance of power has tipped in this community. The game is different now. These ladies are going to change this place. And they have a different kind of power that's going to usurp the power of the greedy developers. They're going to organize that community. It may take 30 years. It may take this woman, this Cambodian woman's lifetime. But Jesus said the good soil would produce 30, 60, 100-fold. And I think, what would 30, 60, or 100 of these bright, shining stars be like in this one community? That's going to change things. I met Chris, who works with Interchange, this Christian order among the poor. Chris and his wife have chosen to live among the poor, chosen to live a very fasted, restricted lifestyle financially because they don't want to be trapped and pierced with many pains, and they feel like helping the poor from alongside is just a better way. Removing as many barriers, including their lifestyle, as possible is one way that they feel like they can minister to the poor. And one of Chris's objectives is working with land rights, throwing himself into the legal structures, trying to use his, he's an Australian citizen, but trying to use his position of power to bring legal energies to bear on the situation. He and his team, this is the Interchange team in Cambodia, live among the poor and serve them from alongside in a variety of ways, including trying to compete in the halls of power to get land rights for these people who are being forcibly evicted from the lands that they're squatting on. Another group of people I hung out with belonged to Servants to Asia's Urban Poor. Again, like Interchange, this is a group that believes we want to live among the poor in their houses next door, not coming in and out, trying to affect the situation by remote control. There's rich, poor, Cambodian, expatriate people all working together, doing things like providing services for mentally disabled kids, chained up, literally some of them chained up at home out of embarrassment because of the karmic system, and helping the caregivers and helping the kids, and considering it a promotion, not a demotion, to work in that environment. They're on this downward quest. For them, it's a joy, it's a privilege to work in that sort of environment. Some of the Cambodians working with Servants to Asia's Urban Poor, their challenge is pretty great because some of them grew up in a poor community, were witnessed to by the Servants missionaries, became Christians, and joined Servants. And Servants says, we're not about upward mobility. If you were sort of born in the slums, we encourage you to remain there and to root yourself there. That's a different sort of challenge than calling the rich, for whom there's this sort of prestige thing in following the downward path. No prestige in staying in some of those communities. And some of these Cambodians have been offered 3 or 4 times the salary by NGOs, and it's wild to be in desperately poor places and see a $50,000 SUV with the agency logo emblazoned on the side, and to think, my gosh, $50,000 for to bring someone around in this, couldn't money be leveraged differently than that? So some of these guys have said no to those salaries in order to work with servants and to hang out with mentally disabled kids. These are the things that I think are really going to change society, that are really going to work against the monopoly spirit. This is the stuff that we're calling some of our students to. You know, IBM and Arthur Andersen and all the great employers are going to be at the placement office. BOFA is not going to send a representative to the placement office at the University of Wisconsin-Madison to appeal to our graduates to come and work in her community and offer them a package that will be competitive with everything else. We're the ones who have that privilege of calling students to say, here's another placement opportunity. We want to let the Holy Spirit sort of be a placement officer for you. Would you consider coming for a summer, planting yourself among BOFA and our community, and considering the possibility of relocating here, like Pia, learning the language, learning the culture, becoming part of the community, and maybe achieving a different kind of ownership, stepping into a different kind of kingdom, bringing something that's different from the monopoly game. And I think, in the end, if the meek are going to inherit the earth, we're in a good place. Because that lady I met is going to be governor of a new kind of kingdom. Pia's going to be a mayor of a new kind of kingdom. That's the game I want to be part of, resisting the monopoly culture and embracing the kingdom culture, which subverts monopoly. And in the end, I think wins. Certainly in the there and then, but I've got to believe that to a certain extent in the here and now, the kingdom wins, and that the meek win. Let's pray. Lord, thanks for the privilege of living in these days when so many challenges lie ahead, particularly in the chaotic times that we're experiencing now. The idea of bringing your kingdom is exciting. Lord, thanks that 1,000 students in Madison have banded together to start a prayer room today for the next 40 days. There's a work of your spirit amongst young people, and it's a privilege to work for InterVarsity. It's a privilege to stand alongside your spirit in the work of exciting kingdom bringers, especially kingdom bringers amongst the most dispossessed, the hopeless, the poor, the broken, the weak. Lord, would you use us today in the small ways that we contribute to this work to awaken Pias, to awaken people who are going to say no to certain things in order to say yes to your kingdom, or who will say yes to the gap in order to bring change at that level in those places. Lord, thanks that we can work with people who have that range of choice in front of them. And would you use us and use InterVarsity in this generation to bring about a subversion of the world's game in order to bring your kingdom? We ask it in Jesus' name. I'll just point out today is Ash Wednesday. If you want to join a few of us who are part of the poverty tracks for Urbana 09, we're going on a Lenten experience of eating what the poor eat. And so on urbana.org, one of the blogs is Least of These. And you'll see a set of sort of 6 weeks of eating with the poor, a different place each week, and a different set of things to eat, restricting yourself to just a couple meals a day. But if you'd like in this Lenten experience to eat alongside a few of us who are going to eat what the poor eat for the next 6 weeks, I encourage you to check out that blog.